Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Welcome to this Tuesday afternoon. John Najarian is on a phone line. You watch him on CNBC. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. We'll talk to him about what's going on Wall Street in just a minute or so. A little bit later in the program, Andrew Herman, an editor at DNA Info. You know, he comes by on Tuesdays to talk about different businesses that are opening or closing in the city. DNA's got a story this week about a series of the Chicago public schools that were shuttered in 2013. A number of them have changed hands and look like they'll reopen soon. So we'll talk to him about that. Also about a couple of guys who are restoring vintage motorcycles in Chicago. They say they're the only guys who do it in town, and they are creating what they say are works of art. Najarian strikes me as a motorcycle guy. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, you'd be correct, sir, but I've had it on. It's been on blocks for a while, mainly until my oldest just turned 18. So maybe my wife will let me take it back out now.
maybe not. You never know. Hey, well, I want to get to Pandora because, once again, anytime there's a big move on Wall Street, it seems to come from CNBC reporting. But tell me in general now, the Dow was up most of the day, and I noticed in the past few minutes it's dipped, not so much, but is there something going on there?
Well, and thank you for that encouraging statement about how CNBC is able to move the markets. And knock on wood, they usually do, or we usually do. I did not see something in the last few minutes, but I have been on the set. We just got off of the Fast Money show. So if something broke in the last few minutes, I have to admit I did not see it. I can pull up, some crude oil and things like that, and that's one of the usual suspects when things turn south like this.
Here's something else. Just while we were talking, a bulletin in Democratic senators asking U.S. regulators to look into whether Carl Icahn violated insider trading laws in the biofuels market. Do you know what that might be about?
I don't. I do know that Carl has been pretty big and pretty vocal about biofuels. Of course, we're talking something near and dear to Chicago's heart because a lot of those biofuels are traded right over at the CME, and they are, separating out the mash after corn, and you end up with the biofuel that goes into our gas as what we used to call ethyl.
Right.
And now it's, of course, ethanol. And if we see an increase in that, that could make a pretty big difference to the price of corn, which has slumped as of lately.
All right, let's go back then to where I started with reporting on CNBC. I think it was Scott Wapner. Was that the reporter?
Scott Wapner, yeah. Wapner, he's the host of our halftime report.
And talked about the fact that Pandora is feeling pretty confident now. Early in the day, Pandora stock had been dropping, but they are getting an influx in cash, and it's looking as if they're going to be able to move things, and that moved Pandora stock quite a bit. Tell me about that.
Sure. Well, his reporting was that they have this $150 million investment by KKR, and that's described as a strategic investment from, of course, one of the largest venture capital or private equity firms. I'll call them private equity firms, and that they are going to join Pandora's board of directors. That was not brand new news today. That was yesterday after the bell. But Scott reported that management is confident that they can get a deal done within the next 30 days. Not for the KKR money, but there have been a lot of people circulating ideas that SiriusXM has made a run at them and things like that. And if a deal came, that perhaps it would be in that $15 range. So the stock immediately popped from the lows of the day to a little over $10 a share. That would be a significant premium, 15 would, to where it's trading right now, but we could see a deal like that, and it's not a lot of money when you consider the greater scheme of things and how much money firms like Apple and or even SiriusXM have to provide.
Well, does this capital make it more likely or less likely that SiriusXM is still involved?
I think they could still be playing a big part in it. Sirius does have a decent app that's on people's phones, but I believe most of that is not the kind you can take offline. Pandora and other music providers have begun on the higher levels to let you not only set your playlist and have it suggest various songs to you, but also make those songs available even when you're not connected to the internet. And I think that might make them a little more attractive to an acquirer.
Yeah, you know, I know that Pandora is criticized in some fronts, but man, I like it. I've become sort of a Pandora guy. Yeah, I love creating stations and finding out what's going to introduce me in that way or another. Another story is about American Airlines. They had record traffic in April, and that was a boost for them today. It's interesting to me because, you know, we have this very public, I don't know if it's a love-hate or a hate-hate relationship with airlines in this country, but we're not running away from them. I mean, we're still traveling, we're still flying, and the airlines are packing people in, it looks like.
Yep, they sure are. And each time this year, Steve, that we've seen a dip, whether it was the travel ban, which was the first dip that I can recall this year, all the airlines dipped on that when the first travel ban was enacted, even though I thought that was overblown. They were a buy. Then the next one was, you know, more or less when Dr. Dow was dragged off the plane and people were just hearing horror story after horror story, not just about United, but about other air carriers and how badly we're treated as flyers. On the other hand, unless they really get undisciplined about the capacity issue on their planes, the planes are full. Every time I fly, which is every week, the plane is absolutely jam-packed. They couldn't put one more body on there. So Americans doing well today. Load factor was, I think, 82.2%, which was up yet again for them. Warren Buffett has been buying into the sector, and he just had his big conference in Omaha over the weekend and talked up the airlines. So it's about as good as it could be for them, despite some pretty terrible treatment by the airlines in many cases.
All right, so it's just about 17 minutes after 12 here. What are you recommending or what are you watching today on Wall Street?
Well, I'll throw two at you real quick. Macy's, we bought that today. They have earnings Thursday this week. We saw a lot of institutional buying in that name. So that was pretty interesting. And then we also had Aflac, the big insurance company. Aflac with the duck and so forth.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Do that for me one more time, John.
Aflac! So we had unusual buying in that one as well, Stephen. So I bought both of those, both Macy's and Aflac today.
John Najarian, follow him on Twitter. All right, John, we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Stephen.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for you being there and listening. I do appreciate that. Andrew Herman is in the studio as well, as I said before, an editor at DNA Info. Andrew, welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
All right. So I was just talking to John Najarian about, and I said, you know, John, you strike me as a motorcycle guy. And he was.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I had one, and I still have one, but I haven't ridden it in 20 years. It's in my garage.
That's kind of the way Najarian said. His is on the blocks, but he hopes to take it off. Well, so you might be a potential client for this company, these motorcycle
guys? If they would like to buy my old motorcycle, I would love to sell it to them.
Well, no, I think if you hold it for much longer, it would be an old gem that would be a potential for refurbishment,
Could be. Yeah, so this is a company called Federal Moto, and as you say, they revamp and redesign used motorcycles. They're at 320 North Damon, so they're on the near west side. It's owned by a couple of brothers, Michael and Peter Mueller, and they started in their parents' garage, and it was one of these things in which a hobby becomes a profession. So they sell these motorcycles, they trick them up, and they sell them for $5,000 to $35,000, and as they say, they're rolling works of art.
So are there a lot of old motorcycles around that are in need of refurbishment like this?
I think you can get a used old motorcycle pretty cheap, and if you can get it running, then you can get it going. But the interesting thing about this place is that where they're at, and they're in this thing called the Industrial Council of Near West Chicago Incubator. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before.
Andrew, you know, I talked about all kinds of incubators on this program. 1871, you know, just name it.
This is a manufacturing
one. But not this
one.
No. I didn't know this one.
This one's been around since the late 1960s. There's four buildings on the near west side. They have 110 different small businesses inside this place. And it's sort of a public-private nonprofit. And so if you have a small business and you're trying to get it launched and you really don't have the revenues to have a you know, go out and rent a space,
right,
you can rent a space for a period of time in one of these buildings there, and I was looking at the clientele. There's a Kraft Ice company, gluten-free snack foods, a pet food company, door frames, light company. So it's really a cool thing, I think.
So the idea that these incubators are new and the hottest sort of thing around, these guys have been doing it since the 1960s.
Yeah, and so they'll get to, so hopefully the companies get big enough, they move out. It's kind of like moving out of the dorms into a real house, and
right.
they'll get some more employees. But it allows
Bad furniture at first, but it's your own place.
Yeah, so small businesses getting a leg up through this great thing on the Near West Side.
Another thing you guys were reporting on at DNA Info this week and the past week are more and more of these Chicago public schools that were closed in 2013 are starting to find new owners, and one is. Tell me about the German International School of Chicago.
Yeah, so this is the old Courtney Language Arts Center at 1726 West Berteau. So that's in North Center. And it's been sold to the German International School of Chicago for $5.3 million. And I've never heard of this German school, but it seems very interesting.
Well, I was reading the article. It's fairly new. I think they started with just a handful of students.
Mm-hmm. And they have dual language, English and German. Education. There's about 100 kids now through 7th grade. They're on Montrose now, but they're looking to expand. And it was started by some German and Austrian and Swiss people living in Chicago who were looking for a way to educate their children in the mother tongue, I guess.
Okay, so they're immigrants or German nationals?
Yeah, well, they're German nationals.
Right.
So I think
so they're here on business or something like that.
Right.
I see.
Now, some of them might have moved here in their permanent residence. I'm not sure about that, but there's enough international business in Chicago where you would have people being transferred here from Germany, and if you may want to send your kid to a German English school, so it's kind of a cool thing.
All right, so there's that in North Center, and then let's go to, is it Andersonville, where the Waldorf School, it might be moving into a building that, I guess they're kind of on a standby, right? They wouldn't be the first choice?
Right, this is the Lyman Trumbull School. This is the old one on Ashland Avenue. It's in Edgewater, but Chicago Waldorf School is looking to get in there. And again, I've heard this word Waldorf School forever and never really knew what it was, but it's a spiritually driven education, focuses on arts and music and reaching potential, and it's one of 1,000 across the planet. So they're around the world, and most of them are in Europe.
And I think you wrote as well about one opening up in Little Italy or moving toward there.
Right. So it's an interest.
So CPS closed 50 schools in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got deals to sell
a dozen. Well, they've sold a dozen, and so they've made $30 million so far. But they have a lot more schools, and unfortunately, a lot of the buildings are in maybe neighborhoods, less desirable neighborhoods. So they're holding on to them, but they insist that this was the cheaper way to go for the system.
I think one of them you listed was sold recently for $10,000. So that must have been a building that needs some
work. Right. So maybe these might be teardown situations, and some developer will use the land and not try to use the old school.
Andrew Herman, you can read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, we talk about incubators and high-tech innovation, all of these new things. Let's relax a little bit and talk about a Chicago company that has been around, family-owned, in fact, for 100 years. It's the Chicago Clock Company, and the president of the Clock Company, Jason Matthiessen, is on a phone line. Jason, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, tell me about the day you started this company 100 years ago.
The day I started.
obviously, if it's family-owned, this is you are a descendant of the guy who founded it, right? Great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather? How does that go?
Yes, it was my great-grandfather that started the business. He started it as a door-to-door clock repairer and basically did the service out of his home.
You know, we were talking earlier about there's a building up on the north side that is just purchased by German International School, where Germans who live here now are going to educate their kids in English and German. And that sort of mirrors your family's history, right? Your great-grandfather was German.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. My grandfather, who followed in his footsteps as well, was straight from Germany.
And it started with these guys going door-to-door repairing clocks. How did it grow from there?
Well, as time went on, my grandfather and grandmother had my dad. And when he got old enough to work the business, he worked in the service with them as well. And he brought in the retail end of it. he started out with a few clocks on display in the repair shop because they were, you know, they eventually got larger and were able to have a actual store,
right,
where they did their service instead of out of their homes. And then he ultimately started opening up new stores.
How many stores do you have now?
We do have four.
Right. And did you always want to be an airline pilot and felt pressure to join the family business, or how did that work?
There was absolutely no pressure to do it. I went went to college, and after college, you know how that is. You're always looking for a job, and I worked a little part-time. And
you worked at a health food store.
So
you worked at a health food store in Old Town.
Yeah, yeah, I did that, and I also, you know, it was right next door to the
okay.
coffee shop. So it was kind of a natural progression for me. And I just never decided to do anything else. I loved it.
Well, you know, I've brought up a few times the idea that sort of the juxtaposition of the new, I'm going to use the word innovation as if there couldn't be innovation in mechanical clocks. But, you know, the technology and all of that, that's what we tend to focus on. And yet here are these mechanical clocks and, you know, you're able to make a go of it and have for 100 years. I would imagine the focus or the demand has changed a little bit as electronics have improved and become, you know, more prevalent in our lives. I mean, you know, we've got clocks on everything now. Why would we need a clock on the wall?
Well, and exactly, you know, I do get that question. And, you know, all my customers come in, they really want something that they're going to be able to, they consider an heirloom.
Yeah.
Something that's going to stay in the family. It's, you know, it's one of those last few things that are still mechanical. If that's the route they choose, of course, we do have the quartz-operated clocks as well. But, yeah, it's an opportunity for them to have something that's going to be mechanical. It's still working when the power goes out and the Internet goes down. And so, you know, it's just a nice piece of furniture that they can pass on to their family and go on from there.
You know, it's funny because I hadn't even thought of this until I started reading about your company and the idea of an heirloom and handing things down. I have at my house a clock that sat on my grandparents' television set when I was a kid, you know, going to visit them in the 60s. They had this clock, this wind-up clock that sat there. And when it came time to distribute things, I said, you know, that's what I want. I remember that clock as my grandparents would sit around and watch Gunsmoke on Sunday nights. So I have that in my house. I kind of am one of the people you're talking about, and I didn't even realize it at the time.
Right. Absolutely.
Is there a story about you have or worked on a clock that survived the Chicago fire, or what's that story, Jason?
Oh, that's a great story, and it's a very recent story to us. This particular clock, it was involved in the Chicago fire. Family members that owned it, they knew that the fire was coming, and it was going to destroy their home, so they buried the clock. And what ultimately happened was the house was destroyed, but they were able to actually locate their property because they could see just a little, about an inch and a half of the finial sticking out of the dirt. They dug it up, and when they ultimately found another home, put it on the mantle, and the clock ran.
Did you say they were able to find their property, their house, just by where the clock was buried?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
And they dug it up, and the clock worked?
It worked. And it worked for several years up on their mantle until one of the family members was cleaning and knocked it off the mantle, and it fell into pieces.
So it survived the Chicago fire, but not a dust mop.
Exactly, exactly. So it sat in the box for several years until they brought it in to us end of last year. And we completely cleaned, rebuilt the movement, restored the case, and kind of brought it back to its original specs, and now they have a working clock again.
So you, from what I read of the biographies of you and your parent, your dad and your grandfather and all, up to your dad, those guys all worked on clocks themselves. I don't sort of read that you are a guy who can go in or does go in and repair clocks. I would imagine that's just a function of the age you grew up in, and it might speak to the fact of how you then bring this company into or continue to bring it along in the 21st century when it comes to digital and growing an online presence and things such as that?
Well, I do actually work on the clock.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes. And Well, my, you know, basically my role on that is to follow the digital times. Basically, since I've been involved in it, we've never really been into watches, so we have brought the watches into the mix. So we do also service the watches. We sell watches. And as we know with the online presence, that's definitely something that I'm very involved with.
Yeah, and how are you doing that? How are you going to expand that way?
Well, we do have an e-commerce site, and with our search engine optimization, we want to be located, we want to be noticed, and that's, you know, that's kind of the aspect of where I handle that right now, as well as the day-to-day operations of the business.
Jason, are you in a shop right now?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I love that because I can hear the chimes. We should have talked to you right at noon. That would have been a lot more noise.
Absolutely.
Jason Mathiesen is the president of the Chicago Clock Company. Well, look, I don't need to wish you luck. You've been at it for 100 years. It's been going okay, but here's to another 100.
Well, thank you very much.
There they are in the background. Nice to talk to you. I wish you success.
Oh, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG. And I told you, I've been telling you over the past 2 weeks, I had a chance to moderate or MC the semifinals of the James Tyree Award from the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. There were 12 people in the round, and they all made a pitch, just a couple-of-minute pitch. And from that, three were chosen. And this week, we're talking to the final three. The winner will be announced in June at their gala, receives $50,000. And one of the three is in the studio with me now. Roman Caropas is here. Roman, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you so much.
I'm laughing because I don't know what it is, but when we talk, I just tend to, my mind goes, I mangle your name, I mangle your company. It happened that night. And so, I'm glad you're here. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, and because I think what you're doing is a pretty fascinating thing. Tell me a little bit about Innova EU and what it is.
So Innova EV is a shared...
See, I did it again, didn't I?
Shared mobility service. And we're focused on providing folks what's called first and last mile mobility with our electric vehicle. So short commutes from your home to the train station or from the train station to your workplace, like we're doing up in Itasca in the suburbs, where we're providing that last mile where it's inconvenient or you have to walk or the elements are not the best. We provide that extension of ridership from the train or the bus stop to your final destination.
So there's a car over my shoulder.
That's right.
A dash car.
That's right.
Which looks a little bit like a stroller I used to pitch my kids in.
It's a dash delivery vehicle. So what we do with that, we're really proud to have our vehicle here downtown. And it was just at the Kentucky Derby in front of 150,000 some people. Our sponsor, Thomas Coffee, is serving coffee right now here on Michigan Avenue. But they're great because Thomas Coffee believes in the values that we believe in, which is sustainability and helping the underserved out.
Okay, so you make these cars, the dash car. They can be solar powered, electrical powered, electric powered.
Yep.
And so that's that. But what you are doing as well then are bringing these cars to underserved neighborhoods and bringing jobs to those neighborhoods.
That's exactly right.
Explain that for me.
So we're really committed to a mobility for all solutions. So not everyone can afford a Tesla or a Nissan Leaf. And we're fundamentally focused on addressing the sustainability issues that our cities and neighborhoods have and also providing upward mobility, for people who really need it the most.
So you're in Bronzeville.
We're going to be starting in Bronzeville here very shortly this summer.
Someone needs a ride to the grocery store, the last mile.
That's right. We're there.
You go. Someone would go pick. So it's almost like a cross between Uber and a Divvy bike.
Correct. The uniqueness that we have versus Uber and Lyft, which I'm a user of both of those, is that we're really focused on that 2-3 mile commute and doing it in a very affordable way. Today, we're between 60% and 80% less expensive than Uber and Lyft in those 3-4 mile rides. And what I love about it, it's sustainable, it's green, zero emission, and we're helping create jobs and provide people access.
So the job you create would be you're hiring some guy or a woman to drive the dash car to pick someone up to bring them to the library,
That's exactly right. And we're also mechanics, so we're going to have a whole fleet of cars down in Bronzeville and other cities like Columbus, which were part of the Smart City Challenge, where the mortality rates are so high for children in certain areas.
Right.
And whether it's transit desert, health deserts, or food deserts, what I love about what we're doing is addressing those. And we do that in a very, let me say, sustainable and affordable way, but we're also creating jobs.
So you're helping people get to fresh food where they might not be able to on their own.
Exactly right.
And you're helping by paying someone to do it.
Exactly right.
So I was talking earlier about how I mangle your name and all of that. Here's what I remember about you, Roman, is when you were talking at that pitch, it became very emotional for you.
It did.
This is an emotional thing for you.
It is. There's a lot. My father had Alzheimer's, and when we had to take his keys away. We saw what that did as far as purpose and him having the ability or independence to leave. And we want to be the ones that can take folks out of their home, take them for a ride to the grocery store and back, or bring food to a mother that has four kids that can't get out
of the house. So do you say one day that people are going to be buying these cars for you and operating independently, or do you see you having fleets all over the place? What's the future?
Right. Today we're focused on fleets, so we operate essentially a service where we hire the drivers. We're always looking for drivers to drive our vehicles and not only move people but also do last mile delivery, whether it's food or packages, in neighborhoods in the city of Chicago and other and neighborhoods in the suburbs. So we're really focused on, again, that last mile delivery. And we'll start selling vehicles in 2018. Right now we're really focused on impacting the areas that we're focused on with our fleets.
Roman Karopas is the founder CEO of Innova EV.
You got it.
Where do people find more info?
You can go to our website, www.innovauev.com. So Innova, INNOVAUEV.com. And we're excited about it. And I hope you see our cars and take a ride.
Yeah, me too. Well, good luck coming up in a few weeks for the final.
Thank you so much.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you.